Hey everyone, just taking a quick 15 seconds to let you know that my new book, The Fitness Mindset, Eat for Energy, Train for Attention, Manage Your Mindset, and Reap the Results, which hit the bestseller list within 24 hours of its release, is now available to buy on Amazon. So if you're looking for everything you need to get into incredible shape and the mindset to keep it forever, be sure to check it out. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset. With your host, Brian Keane.
Hey everybody, okay, a little bit of a different episode today. I recently did a Q&A or a question and just an interview with the Frankly Nuts podcast. I think there's a lot of value here, so I wanted to put it up on my channel as well. And we got into everything from my background in school, coming up through the college system, and my time in London, to my background in GEA, what I achieved through that and working with people now, to my career as a fitness model, traveling the world for 2 years, and then my lead up into the Marathon de Sable that I've signed up for next year. So this one's a little bit different, so dying to hear you find it. Be sure to let me know, hit me up on DM on Instagram, or hit me up on Snapchat, BrianK019, if this is something you like, something you love, something you hate, or if it's something that you did or didn't listen to, and you liked the format, so definitely keep me posted on it. Enjoy.
Welcome to episode number 10 of the Frankly Nuts podcast. This week, we're joined by none other than Brian Keane of Brian Keane Fitness. How are you getting on, Brian?
How are you doing, lads? Thanks for having me on.
No hassle at all.
Thanks for coming on, Brian. So I suppose what we normally do is we start with a bit of rapid fire. So we do a few fun questions with our guests. So do you want to start off, Kev?
Yeah, so they're like this or that question. So the first one we have for you would be your favourite TV show.
At the minute, I'm on a Narcos buzz. I would have said Game of Thrones up till now, but I'm all over Narcos at the minute.
Narcos is a good one. Very good. Who's your favourite music artist at the moment?
I've the worst music taste ever. I've been in a joke on running with my Snapchat people that I've the worst taste in music. Like, I could be listening to anything from 90s pop, S Club 7 to 5, but I actually genuinely am a fan of Eminem. Like, he's the only person that I go see in concert in terms of an artist. I love Ed Sheeran as well, so that gives you a bit of a context or a contrast.
Yeah, I like it.
Would you be a morning person or a night owl?
I am naturally better in the morning, but not first thing. Now, I get up probably about 4:45, depending on the morning, but it takes me about an hour to even get rolling. Like, one of the reasons I get up so early is so I don't have to communicate with anybody first hour. I can't string sentences together until I've been up and had some food. So I generally just get up a few hours before everybody else, and then I'm like rocking my 7 a.m. and I'm buzzing. So I would say morning if I had to pick one.
Cool, yeah. So we did a few weeks ago, we did a bucket list, right? 30 things that we want to do before we're 30 years of age. So could you tell us one thing that's on your bucket list?
I am going ticking one of them off. It'll be after 30 because I'm 30 in December. I'm doing the Marathon de Sable in April, which is a 256-kilometer self-sufficient run through the Sahara Desert in Morocco. Yes. That's one I'm doing next year. That'll be one that I'll be ticking off.
Brilliant, yeah. Jesus. And we actually saw that in your Instagram story last night. So I suppose you'll talk about it
I'm
very intrigued.
How would you describe your perfect Saturday night?
Oh, I'm such a loser. My perfect Saturday night is, and I do this every Saturday night. I have my little girls with me every weekend, so staying in, watching some form of kids film, and then either playing with her and me reading the book and jumping between the film and just chilling out on a Saturday night.
Cool, I love it. And what is your favorite sport? I think we know the answer, but we'll ask anyway.
Do you know what? I love so many sports. Like, football is my favorite sport, like, by a stretch. I love hurling. I love soccer. I had a season ticket when I lived in London. I'm an Arsenal fan. Yeah, like, I coach the Irish amateur rugby team. Like, I love different sports, but if I had to pick one that I can only watch for the rest of my life, it'd be Gaelic football.
Cool.
Yeah, like it. Your biggest pet peeve?
My biggest pet peeve, and this is such a gym rat pet peeve, but it's I'm going to tee it up and pre-frame it, that when people walk in front of you when you're doing a set in the mirror, now it's not because of the normal, oh, I want to look at how good I look when I'm lifting weights, when you're checking form, and I'm big on working retention, always checking my form, and when somebody stands in front of me, especially when they're just like on their phone, I'm like, that's my biggest pet peeve in life. Even though it's a gym one.
And would you be a tea or a coffee man?
Oh, coffee. I used to drink loads of tea because I was a teacher for... Oh, nice. Coffee. I was a teacher for 4 years, so I drank a lot of tea when I was teaching because it's kind of part of the trade. But now I drink more coffee. I drink a lot of green tea now. I actually don't drink any normal tea anymore. I made myself so sick of it, but I'm a coffee guy by far.
Same as us. Same as ourselves. I think I know the answer to this one as well, but Instagram or Twitter?
Oh, I'm not even on Twitter, I don't think. I'm not even on Twitter. And it's funny because I'm on every platform. I'm on Snapchat, Facebook, Instagram. I do a podcast, a blog, loads of different things. Twitter, not a fan. I also, from a business point of view, Twitter, unless they change strategy soon, probably won't be around in the next 5 years. And I tend to try and double down on the things that are going to support me or support more people. Because Twitter kind of dropped the ball a while back in terms of social media strategy. So, I'm an Instagram guy.
Instagram, yeah, I think a lot of people share that opinion. And I know you do a lot of reading. What's your favorite book?
If I had to pick, I know these are rapid fire and I'm expanding on all of them. I'm the worst rapid fire person ever. What right answer? No, it's time. My favorite book of all time is Robert Greene's Mastery. Robert Greene was a historian, and the book Mastery speaks about the 10,000 hour rule, about becoming a master in your trade. He talked about Da Vinci, Napoleon Bonaparte, Charles Darwin. I'm a big history geek. I love studying people like that, and it's my favorite book. It's not the one I recommend the most because there's other books that would provide more value, but it's my book, the same book that I read every year. I've probably read or listened to it 5 or 6 times now at this stage. Love it.
Perfect. Yeah, and we'll finish. Apart from ourselves, who is your favorite podcast?
I listen to Gary Vaynerchuk's Gary V Audio Experience religiously. I'm a big podcast guy. I love podcasts. I love audiobooks and podcasts. And I just spend most of my time jumping between the two. But the one that I consume the most regularly is probably Gary V's Audio Experience.
Perfect. Yeah, we love Gary V ourselves. So I suppose that's the end of the rapid fire. So where we want to start with yourself is we want to take it back to school, because I've read that you were saying that you kind of didn't have the best of time in school. You weren't the best student. It's because you talked about how you had dyspraxia, and I have that myself as well. And I kind of learned in school that you'd become almost written off with it. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to know was, at such a young age, when you were told you won't amount to nothing, at that age, your head is kind of like a sponge. How did you deal with all of that? How did you?
I was very, very, very fortunate to have the mum that I have. So even though I didn't get the support in school, per se, from teachers, I got a lot of positive reinforcement at home that I wasn't smart. I knew myself, and I am, from an objective point of view, again, smart, all of these things are all subjective to each person. But objectively, I can retain information and spray it back, or I can internalize it, contextualize it, and then give it back out. I was always able to do that. But when you're not able to put it onto a piece of paper and hand it to your teacher and them not tell you you're smart, and you would have, I was a lad, played sport, and I was a troublemaker up until I was about 16. And also when it's a bit, this is one of the reasons I got into teaching, was when you, that negative reinforcement is given to you in a classroom and teachers are calling you stupid and telling you you won't amount to anything, you start to play up to that then, and you're like, well, I'm not going to, I'm not going to behave. I'm not going to sit here if you think I'm an idiot.
Right, exactly.
And it was just mischanneled energy. And I was very, very fortunate that my mum would always tell me, she was like, look, you're so smart. She goes, maybe you can't put it down onto a piece of paper. She goes, but you're able to remember things. And she saw that I get very, and I still, this still happens, where I get obsessed with a topic. It's one of the reasons that when someone asked me about, a person that I follow, I'm a big fan of, say, Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, Owen Berkshire Hathaway, Owen's Coca-Cola. I can tell you everything about them because I get very obsessive when I'm learning something, and then I can retell it back. It's why probably I've been lucky and fortunate enough to grow a fitness business in the way that I have, is because I got obsessed with training, with nutrition, with supplements. It's just something that I loved internalizing. And going to the school system, it's why I get so verbal when people ask me now about letting other people's opinion become your reality, because had I done that, I wouldn't be talking to you here. There would be no podcast interview, there would be none of the things that I have. I was very, very fortunate to have my mum support that. And I also had an amazing principal in my school. Now, I was very fortunate that he was a big GA guy. And I always played. I always on the school teams, always on the underage county teams. So he warmed to me. And even though I was getting kicked out of classrooms regularly, it was happening at least at least two or three times a week. And I remember he told me, he was like, look, he goes, you're going to be fine. He goes, you're a nice lad. I've seen how you are. I put this at the start of my book. In the introduction section about how important it is to follow the right people and have the right network around you. But I remember a conversation that we had when I got kicked out of the classroom. Like I was calculating my tin rep maths in the back of the classroom. So I was doing math, but I got kicked out of the classroom for not doing the task that we were supposed to be doing. And I went down to the room and he told me, he was like, look, he goes, you're going to be fine. I've seen what you're like as a person. You're going to be okay. So it's so funny because I met him recently. He's someone I hope to run into soon because I'll be putting this on my channels. I hope his child, I think, is 18 or 19 now. So if he's following, be sure. Breen McCurran was my teacher's name, principal's name. I know his son follows me. So hopefully he'll hear this as well. And he was one of the other people that when you're a sponge at that age and you're very, very – you can go one way or the other. Now, I was fortunate. I had a pretty strong personality, even though it was channeled in the wrong way. But getting that reinforcement from my mom and getting that reinforcement about that I was going to be fine in life, even though I had a terrible leaving cert. And it's funny because when I start sprouting on things now, I can tell you anything about the body or anything about nutrition or whatever it is because it's what I'm interested in. Yourself when you have dyspraxia. If you can't write a piece of information down and it's not legible, you're not going to get high marks for it. And I was very fortunate that I went to college and that I did very, very well in college. Like I got an honors degree. I got a postgraduate in teaching because I was allowed to type things, you know, and that made a huge difference for me individually. So it's one of those things that, again, the school system works for some people. Like I love the Albert Einstein quote that if you judge a fish's ability to climb a tree, it'll go through its whole life thinking it's stupid. And everybody has some form of genius in them. It's just really important at that age not to let other people's opinion dictate your reality and who you become, and to do the things that you love. Because as long as you work hard and love what you're doing, you're going to be successful in whatever your area of life you choose. And it's just very important at that age to not let the teachers, not let the people, not let your peers tell you who you are, because otherwise, you're going to get molded into the person that you were never supposed to be. And I got very fortunate that it took me a while. And they say your mess becomes your message. And one of the reasons that I talk to a lot, I have a lot of young, particularly my GA youth program, I have a lot of young guys coming through that program. Anytime these questions come up, sometimes they're nothing to do with fitness or nutrition. But it's all connected because how you do anything is how you do everything. And if you can't focus on your mindset in school and you're being, you know, having a bad time, you're not going to be able to do your gym or your GEA or your fitness or your nutrition or whatever it is. So the truth is I was lucky that I came out the other side. But I do try and do a lot of content now based on that. And I do get very verbal and very animated when people tell you that you can't do something or tell you who you should be. And when you know in your heart of hearts that you're smart, and you know in your heart of hearts that you're creative, or you know in your heart of hearts you're supposed to do something, but we let other people tell us we can't do it. And I tend to get quite animated on my channels with that. So yeah, of course, that wasn't a rapid fire, so I don't feel too bad for expanding on that one.
I love the rambling, though. I like it.
Fair play. And you mentioned you went to college then. Was the Sligo IT you attended?
I did my undergraduate in Sligo, and I did my postgraduate in St. Mary's in London, in Twickenham.
Oh, cool, yeah. And how was that experience?
Amazing. Like, it was probably the best 4 years. I did an honors degree, so it was 4 years. Probably the best 4 years I've ever had. It's funny because college is one of those make or break times. Because now it broke me, like, as in, like I was living a very, very straight and narrow lifestyle. If you're talking like GA, football, training, sleeping, and all these things, so that I could be better. And then I got pretty heavy into the drinking lifestyle and the party lifestyle. Now I had a really bad alcohol problem. Like I was drinking six nights a week for fucking 4 years. I don't know if I can swear on you.
You're right.
For 4 years. So again, it was one of those things that I wouldn't change. I had an amazing time. And I did everything. I still trained. I still played GA. I still did really well in my exams. I was just out. I was a highly functional alcoholic. But it was an amazing 4 years. I recommend anybody go to college, if only for the experience. Again, as I said, I don't think the college and traditional path is for everybody. Like, there's other people that are going to be amazing kinesthetically or creatively in other areas of life. But purely for the experience and the people you'll meet and the person you become, I recommend it to anybody. I had an amazing time.
Yeah, definitely. College is definitely a time for you to find yourself and kind of grow as a person. But what would you say would have been your highlights in college? Did you go on J1s? Did you?
I did three J1s. I did two J1s and then a H1. I think it was a H1, the one where you do the longer period when you graduate. Amazing. My J1s were brilliant. My second one was a massive turning point in my life because I was coming up to the age of 21. I was living in a fraternity house out there, so I was working, teaching soccer. So I have a lot of coaching background in sports.
Yeah.
And I was 19, 20. I was coaching soccer with Berkeley University, which is one of the main colleges over in California, and I was teaching soccer there, and I was living in a fraternity house, which is, if you've ever seen the movies like American Pie or any of those old school movies where there's like 50 people or 50 lads living in a house and there's parties and just kegs and drink everywhere, that I was living in one of those houses. Needless to say, I was at a party one night and I had been feeling a bit sick leading up to this point, but you kind of put it down to a hangover after a certain point, and I was pretty out of shape. This was the first time in my life I was well out of shape at this stage compared to what I normally was. And I was playing out there. I was still playing GA because you get paid. I was playing with Sean Tracy's out there and they pay you in California. They were a senior club. So I was playing out there. But I was at a party one night, and all the drinks at these parties are free. So they've got kegs, they've got 1.75 liters of vodka and tequila. Like, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. Like, I thought this was amazing. But I had a stomach ulcer, and it just started to bleed one night, and I had to be rushed to hospital. And they admitted me in hospital out in America, which isn't a very nice experience. That was a bit of a turning point for me because I came off alcohol for a while then, and then I relapsed back, and then I had to go back to hospital in UIG in Galway, where I was doing tests for 2 weeks and they wouldn't let me out. And then it was then when I made the transition out of, right, my life is a mess, I'm drinking way too much, I'm eating way too much crap. And I kind of went the other way then, and that was probably when I really started to take the gym and nutrition more seriously. I was still doing it, but I wasn't doing it like legit, right? This is who I am now, and this is what I'm doing. So that was my biggest takeaway. My biggest experience was probably the J1 that I had to come back and kind of reevaluate my life. But that was the highlight. Like, they were the best summers ever. Like, you know.
You don't regret it, though.
Oh, not at all. Like, it's funny because there's nothing in my life I regret. There's things that I would choose to do differently if they happened right now. But I'm a firm believer in that all the mistakes and all the things that have, quote unquote, are failures, or that I've learned from them, and you become the person you are today as a result of the things you've been through and the experiences you've had. There's no way I'd be living the fitness lifestyle doing what I'm doing now had I not gone through that. I slayed my dragons thin, so I was able to do this now.
Definitely love it.
And I think then, you went to, after college, did you go to London and you were actually originally a teacher?
Yeah, so I went to London to do a postgraduate. So when I came back from California, I went to London and I went to St. Mary's University. I did a postgraduate in primary school teaching. I loved it. Like, I was 4 years in London total. So I was a year studying, then I was 3 years working as a teacher, 3.5 years working as a teacher. And I loved it. It was what I wanted to do. And it was one of those stories that I told myself because I grew up a certain way, and I grew up in the kind of with the being told a story that you go to school, you get a degree, you get a job, and then you're successful. And that's what I thought success meant. I didn't realize that there was other things. Success is what it means to you. It's subjective to each person. So I literally went to college, got my teaching degree, got my first job, And I was like, right, I've got it now. This is everything I ever wanted. I'm done. And I hated my first job. Like, hated it so much. Like, I remember coming back, and I've told this on my podcast a couple of times, that I remember coming back after my first 4 months of teaching, and it was Christmas time at home, and I was only like 23, and I started bawling to my mum. Like, I was like, I'm a fully grown man, 23, like, like, Mom, I don't want to go back to London, I hate it, it's crap. And it's funny because anytime anyone ever sends me nice messages, and particularly things like the book doing so well, the podcast doing so well, and a lot of the content that I put up, particularly the lifestyle stuff and talking about my own experiences, my own issues with anxiety, stress, you know, worry, all these things that everybody deals with, I'm always like, you can thank my mum, because my mum made me quit that job and sign me up to a fitness instructor course. And that was the start of it. And that literally, from there on, I went on, did my personal training, did my strength and conditioning, did my sports nutrition, did everything that I've been doing, all down to that moment. So as they say, the worst things that happen, you can choose to look at them that way. I hated that job, and I realized that that's not what I wanted to do, even though I loved teaching. And I did go back, you know, a different story probably for a different time. And I did go back because it took me a couple of attempts to get my business off the ground. But It all spurred from realizing that this isn't what I want to do. And I followed the path because everybody told me I should. And I knew it wasn't for me. I knew fitness was the thing I should have gone into. Because we all know, we all have that feeling inside. We all have that good feeling telling us this is what you should be doing. But I didn't listen. I listened to what everybody else told me. And I followed the safe path, the predictable path. The irony, the safe path isn't the safe path. Like, I was on the road to being one of those people that, you know, died at 25, but wasn't buried until he was 80. I was on that path. So I'm very fortunate to have got off it and to be doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I like that though. I think there is credit due to you for leaving that job and kind of pursuing something that you did love. And you went on to be you went into the fitness industry. And am I right in saying you were a fitness model for a while?
Yeah. So I did that for 2 years total. I was a professional fitness model. So, which basically means when I used to compete, and you compete for pro cards, which means that you compete for money. And then I was traveling all around the world doing photo shoots and things like that. So I did that for about 2 years. Largely for me, it was to try and get my business off the ground. Because I needed, when I moved back to Ireland 3.5 years ago, I had no business. I had, nobody knew who I was. I had no social media. I had no clients. I took all my first clients in Galway City. I took them for free because I had none. Say that again.
You had to build that reputation.
I had to build it up. No one knew who I was. So I used, at the time, there wasn't that many people doing the fitness model thing, not locally anyway. And I remember thinking, right, this may separate me from other people. So I pursued that path. And I did it for 2 years. I did the Worlds in Las Vegas, which is a pay-per-view show. I had Holly and my mom and everyone watching it from home, became the 8th in the world in that. And I did pretty well in it, subjectively for what I went in to do it for. And then obviously the photo shoots and just magazines and things like that. So I was very fortunate, but that's, that had a means to an end. It's not something that I do that much anymore.
And what was the lifestyle like with that? Like, were you on a, would you have to stay in shape more or less all year round, or while you're in season? Dieting and stuff, I'd imagine, is quite extreme.
I'm lucky in the sense that I never really, like, the shape I hold now, like, I never ever really go above 10% body fat ever. Like, my body's just set at that now. My nutrition's always clean. I don't count calories. I don't count my macros. I just eat really, really clean now because I don't need to count them anymore. And I'm very fortunate that I hold shape. Like, genetically, I hold size. I grew up on a farm, so I've been lugging fucking bales of hay around since I'm 11. So I've got a build there. And as long as I keep my nutrition on point, my body fat stays relatively low. That lifestyle isn't much different to how it is now. The only difference was I might get called for a shoot or something next week. And I'd have to cut my carbs and load my water and just try and peak for the shoot. But it wasn't very different to what I'm doing now. It was a lot more obsessive in terms of counting calories, counting macros, not missing training sessions ever. And again, my little girl, I've got a daughter, she's 2 now. She was born in May, and I did the Worlds in Vegas in August, and I came out of the Worlds, and I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm done now. This isn't conducive with the life I want to live anymore. For me, it wasn't a very healthy lifestyle. There was extreme dieting, calorie restriction. I was abusing fat burners, like, to the point that I'm sure my receptors were completely blown out. But it was just, again, it wasn't a good period in my life in terms of even my own. I've had issues with body dysmorphia, and because you don't see what other people see, particularly in the fitness model world, when you're competing, because your bar moves, when you're looking at guys who are, you know, 90 kilos ripped and you're only 85 kilos, you're like, why haven't I 90 kilos? And your bar moves. So everyone's looking at you and you're big and lean and you have a six pack and whatever it is. And inside, you can only see the negative points. Like I've spoken about on other podcasts and on myself and my own one, like, I do a lot of reading on evolutionary psychology. I'm a big fan of David M. Buss, who's the evolutionary psychologist, main evolutionary psychology professor at Harvard. And I love his books. And he talks about how we're wired to see negative things. It's wired in neuroscience of our brain that it kept us alive years ago. Like, if you were walking through the savannah and you saw a saber-toothed tiger or something rustling in the bushes, and it was a saber-toothed tiger, you were better to focus on something negative there because you were going to survive and then pass on your genes to somebody else. Richard Dawkins has a great book, The Selfish Gene, that goes into that more as well. And I was at that stage when I was competing that all I could see was the negative parts of my body. Even though my arms were big, my shoulders were big, my legs were big, my abs were sliced, I would see my chest and not be happy with my chest. Or I would see that my tricep didn't have the same split that someone on Instagram had. Because your bar moves and all you can see is the negative things. And it's funny because a lot of girls, particularly girls, guys as well, that come through particularly my normal fitness program, not my GEA one, have similar issues where they're just comparing themselves with other people. And I love the quote that comparison is the thief of joy. And that's kind of where I was at when I was competing. I was comparing myself to other people consistently. And I had my own issues with body dysmorphia. I had my own issues with health at that stage because I was abusing fat burners. I was massively calorie restricting. And again, I had a little girl now who became priority number one. And my lifestyle has massively changed. Those Worlds were over 2 years ago. And I have a very, very different lifestyle now to what I had then.
Yeah, cool. And I think you mentioned it there about Instagram. But one question that was sent in to us to ask yourself is, do you kind of see all the Fit Fam Army on Instagram, those who necessarily mightn't have the experience you have, would you see them as kind of direct competitors, or would you kind of feel they're ruining the industry?
I don't really see it as either, to be honest. There's a couple of things on that. One, I'm on the highest end of, I'm not great at knowing what other people are doing. I know myself that all my source of anxiety, all stress that ever comes up on me is when I'm focusing on what other people are doing. Like when you're doing your thing, whatever it is, like when I'm providing content to people that are following me, just trying to give as much value as I physically can. I don't really know what other people are doing, with the exception of a couple of people who I'm friends with. And like, I know sometimes what Rob is doing, Rob Lipset. I know sometimes what Recalibrated Bodies are doing. I know sometimes what Phil Graham or Ben Coomer are doing because they might pop up on my feed because I'm friends with those people. But anybody outside of that, I don't really know. I'm the worst one because I don't follow it. So I don't necessarily think it's ruining the fitness industry. I think the majority of people that are there are trying to help. I don't believe that an ab selfie every 6 hours and a glute photo every 6 hours is helping. But it's each to their own. And I know myself that not everything you see on Instagram is true and reality, because I was there. I was that person on Instagram 2 years ago or 3 years ago that was putting up a photo because I wanted likes, because I needed my ego stroked because I felt bad about how I looked. And I wanted everyone to think that my life looked perfect. So I would stage a photo and I'd make sure that when I was doing a photo shoot that there was a photo of me and the photographer and I had my abs in the shot and people would say to me, oh my God, I love your life. I love what you're doing. And objectively looking into it, I was traveling around the world. I was doing photo shoots. I was a lean guy. And a lot of people were like, oh my God, I love your life. And that's when I was at my most unhappiest, but you wouldn't see it because I didn't put it on Instagram that way. I wasn't talking to you about my insecurities. I wasn't talking to you about my vulnerabilities. I was making it look like I had an amazing life because I was insecure with how I was. Now, I'm not saying that's how anyone else is on Instagram. I would never put words in other people's mouth, but that's how I was. So when you see things on Instagram, it's always like, take it with a pinch of salt. because it's not always what you see is truly what's going on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and GA is like a big target market for yourself from what I've seen with your lean body program and things like that. Can I ask you a little bit about your own GA career? Or are you still playing GA at the moment?
I do a little bit now. I play a little bit with my club recreationally. Nothing too hectic. I'm largely in the coaching capacity now because I have so many people coming through my program and the people that I work with. My own career was largely, I grew up bread and butter GA family. Like that was it. Like we weren't allowed to play soccer or rugby, me or my sister. It was GA, that was it. Dad would not let us play anything else. Like, Dad has an All-Ireland medal with the Goy Miners. Mum has one in basketball. So we have a sporty family. And I grew up playing all the underage counties. I played under 16. I was in the minor team, in that whole squad, the under 21. And then I moved to California. I played senior out there with Sean Tracy's. Then I moved to London and I flew over and back at my club. We won an All-Ireland. We won an All-Ireland junior title with our club. And then we played on the next few years. I played senior all the way up through until we got relegated at 20 when I was 21, 22. The year I went to California first, we got relegated that year. I wasn't playing with them. It was totally because I was gone. No joke. Now I play again. I took a proper 2-year break when I was competing and traveling the world from 25, 27. I completely took a break from GA. I stepped out of it completely. And now I'm largely back in the coaching capacity, working with the players that I'm working with. And I love it because it's funny because a weird thing happens when you start to get a little bit older with GA. You know that you can't play forever. When you hit 26, 27, 28, you realize that, right, there's really only a couple more years that I have here. You know, some will stretch it out and some will play junior and they'll do all these things. But what I love about the coaching capacity that I'm doing now is that's infinite. Like you literally could be, you know, I was the coach of the Galway Miners, their strength and conditioning when they won the Connacht title. They won the last 3 years. We got the All-Ireland last year. So working with those players, I have a lot of them coming through, a lot of them playing with the under-21s now coming through the program. I have people all over the country that are doing it now. I'm very fortunate. I work with a couple of the inter-county guys, TJ Reid, who plays for Kilkenny, and a couple of others who we can't name because of for obvious reasons, non-disclosure reasons. So I love that. It's kind of just giving back to the sport that I played all my life. And I love it. It's the thing I would do for free. You know, it's again, I always base success, and success for each person is what success means to you. And my success was waking up every morning realizing that if I won the lotto tomorrow, I'd still do what I'm doing for free. And that's how I feel now. The Q&As that I do, the podcasts that I do, the programs that I have, and the people that I get to work with, I'm like, I would do that for free. And for me, that's what success looks like for me. Again, that's different for each person. It's very important to understand what that means for you. But for me, that's what it is. And again, it's just my GA has been my life since, with the exception of a 2-year period, and I still followed it and went to games. I played all my life and it's been a huge part of my life. And I love the discipline, the people that I played with and grown up with. And winning All-Ireland with my club was the best thing I've ever done. Like that was amazing, playing in Croke Park with the guys you played with since you were 6 and 7. Like that was an incredible experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. So yeah, that's kind of my career, my GA career in a nutshell.
Very good.
And you have a podcast now as well, the Brian Keane podcast. Can I ask you, what would you say would be the positives and negatives of the podcasting industry?
The positives, well, I think the positives are absolutely new. Like, I'm gonna struggle for the negatives. The podcast is one of my favorite things at the minute because the way that we consume, and I've been listening to podcasts for 10 years. Like, I was listening to, I didn't even realize they were around. I was listening to a podcast by a guy called Anthony Presciano. He used to be a BSN athlete back when I was 19. I remember driving down from Sligo when I'd come home and I would listen to his podcast. It used to be on the BSN website. So I've been listening to podcasts. They've been around for about 10 years. And I've been pretty late to the game with it. But I don't think they've anywhere near hit their peak yet. The way we consume podcasts, because you can consume it pretty actively if you choose, you can sit down and you can listen and plug it in, or you can consume it passively when you're driving in the car or on a treadmill or doing your cardio or whatever it is, it's so easy to consume the information. I do think it's going to blow up because at the end of the day, everything we do is about saving time. We're in that environment now where people are just trying to save time, and podcasts do that. They allow us to do two things at once. We can cook our food, we can wash the dishes, we can do whatever we're doing and consume a podcast. So I personally think they're going to blow up even more. In terms of negatives, I don't really know any negatives with it. They're a little bit hard to set up and edit and put up there and out there compared to, say, a YouTube or an Instagram video. But with the exception of that, I couldn't see any negatives with it. I'm a big fan at the minute.
Love it. And obviously, your podcast has been extremely successful. I think you've something like 70,000 downloads a month.
Up to 80. And, 80 last month.
Drop that in there. And
just dropping it in.
So we set up 9 weeks ago. If you were giving tips to someone setting up a podcast right now, what tips would you give them?
Best tips I would give is, again, the tip I give for anybody trying to build any form of media, so be it social media, Instagram, Facebook, podcast, try and provide as much value as physically possible. Like, at the end of the day, if that's what it's about, like they say, and I can't remember who the quote's attributed to, but it's like, don't become a man of money, become a man of value. And that's how everything blows up. When you try and provide more value, and again, at the end of the day, that's all any of us are trying to do. When I'm coming onto your podcast, it's trying to provide value to the people listening. You know, I'll share this on my pages. People will be able to hear it, and you're going to have all, yeah, there we go. Shout out, lads. Like, yes, got it. But you see, it's just providing value to people. Like, at the end of the day, if you, I love the Zig Ziglar quote, which is, if you help people get what they want, you'll get everything you want. And the podcast is walking example of that, that just try and provide as much value as you can. The one thing I would identify with first is try and figure out who you're speaking to and how you provide them value. There's a reason that I don't talk a lot of business stuff on my podcast, because the people listening to my podcast are into health and fitness, they're into GA, they're into the mindset side of things. It's probably why the book did so well, because of the mindset side. But I don't talk business stuff, even though I will talk business all day because I love it. So it's very important to know who your avatar is, who are you speaking to, and then design your content around that. I know who I'm speaking to when I create content. And again, I'm very fortunate that I get to do what I do. But when I'm doing podcasts, again, and I answer questions largely. I get guests on my podcast. I do topics, but largely I answer questions, because otherwise you're kind of guessing sometimes on what people want. If you just ask them, you know, it's business 101. Ask people what they want and then give it to them. Podcast is the same. What do people want to listen to? What do they want to hear from you? And then try and provide as much value as you can to them.
Brilliant.
Jeez, yeah, I love it. Yeah. So, like, you have a lot of achievements on your CV, but one that would stand out is you are a best-selling author. How was the experience of writing the book, The Fitness Mindset? How was that?
Long. I won't say stressful, because stressful would intend that it was giving me sleepless nights or that I was frustrated doing it. I loved the process. Again, I'm all about the quotes, as you can tell, but I love the Buddha quote that you can't be happy at a destination if you're not happy at the journey. And one of the reasons that I love the book so much is I did love the process of writing it. The truth is, I knew it was going to do well, because I very much tried to put as much value into it as I physically could. And I read a lot of books. Like, I read 2 or 3 books every week. So I get through a lot of books, and I know that a lot have filler content in it, where there's 2 or 3 nuggets of gold, but it's spread amongst a lot of filler. I had, my book is 30,000 words. It was 60, and I cut 30,000 of those words from it, because I was like, right, everything that's not in here that's going to provide the most amount of value, I'm taking it out. Like, it's so weird, because I tell people, and I said this to my sister. My sister is a PhD. She's a lecturer in Northumbria University in the UK. And I remember having the conversation with her before the book came out. And I was like, I want a book people would read. And she was like, of course people are going to read it. That's what they do. I was like, they don't, though. I was like, I've got 3 or 4 books at home that I've looked at and been like, oh, that's pretty daunting. I'll start that next week, which was 6 years ago. Like, and I wanted to write a book that you could pick up and read. You could put it down. You could come back to it. You could highlight it. So I took out absolutely everything that wasn't going to provide value. It's probably why. Now, I was blown away, because it hit the bestseller list within 24 hours on Amazon, like, and it stayed there for 8 weeks. And then it went, and then it went into Dubreuil's, the Irish bookstores. It hit number 1 in there as well. It was surreal. I remember I did a Facebook Live the day the book came out, and I got a little bit emotional on it because a lot of people were saying, I can't wait for your book to come out. I can't wait for your book to come out. And you kind of take it with a pinch of salt. Yeah. And then when it went out and I got a message from Amazon and they're like, books hit the bestseller list. I was like, oh my God. Like it did. And then I was doing a Facebook Live to thank people. And then it got a bit overwhelming because the book was, particularly the mindset section of the book, like I split it. The book is called, for anyone that doesn't know, it's called The Fitness Mindset. The whole first half of the book is all fitness. So everything that I continually tell people, nutrition, training, supplements, sleep, alcohol, hydration, the stuff that I've been doing the last 10, 12 years, the last 5, 6, 7 years working with people, it's all in the first half. And then the second half of the book is all the mindset stuff. The stuff that we don't realize is not helping us long term. Like, the truth is, the majority of us know how to get in shape. Again, depending on the shape you want, there's different things you'll do. But we know that we eat better food, we do a little bit more exercise, we try and get, you know, our sleep every night, and we stay hydrated and don't drink that much alcohol. But it's not what sets people back. It's the mindset behind it. It's the anxiety. It's the stress. It's the not creating habits. It's not having the right goals. It's seeing life a certain way. And I wrote that whole section. And it's funny because it's such a grim thing. And I tell people, I put this on my Snapchat every once in a while. One of the weirdest things, I dedicated the book to my mom and to my daughter because they're the two people in my life. Like my daughter is my why, and my mom is the, I'm the person I am today because of her. And I dedicated the book to them. And the reason I wrote the mindset section of the book, and probably why it's got over 318 five-star reviews on Amazon, you know, since it's been out. Like, it's been nuts. But the mindset section was for Holly. I was like, if anything ever happened to me, and I have this thing that I do, and like, I don't want to go to the grave with my biggest dreams inside me. And I also don't want to go to the grave with the messages inside me that I think will help other people. And I wrote that whole section of the book, particularly the life lessons and the tips and things that I found, the whole last section of the book, that's for her. Like, and that was the stuff that people were coming back to me with. They were like, I never thought about things that way. I never thought about, you know, that was one of the reasons for my unhappiness. Because at the end of the day, you know, I also don't care what my daughter does. If she wants to clean the street, she can clean the street. But I want her to be happy in what she does. You know, it's what my mom always told me. And I wrote the entire section of the book in case anything ever happened to me. But it's probably, that is a pretty strong fire in a why to make sure that the content was good. And again, it was not holding back. I don't hold back in anything that I do. I try and tell things like it is, or whatever way I see it or perceive it to be. And as a result, the book has done so well. And I've been very fortunate to everyone that's read it or picked it up. People that have passed it on. Like, the reason it's been continually selling is because people are passing it on and telling people to check it out, which is the biggest testament that I can ever get back. Because not only did you feel that it helped you, but you thought it was good enough that you were going to put your name and pass it on to somebody else and be like, look, check out the anxiety section, or here, check out the sleep section, or whatever it is that people are dealing with. So yeah, it's been an amazing experience. I've already started rocking on book number two. So yeah, good.
Cool. And we know you're running on a tight schedule there, and we loads of stuff we wanted to ask you, so we might sit down with you another time.
Yeah, 100%. We'll smash out. We'll smash out another 5-6 minutes, and then we'll head on with it. Let's rock it. I'm enjoying this, and then we'll hit a parachute.
So you mentioned earlier about the Sahara Marathons.
Yes.
Can you tell us what's the story of them? They just seem absolutely crazy.
So the Marathon de Sable is the Marathon of the Sands. So it's a 256-kilometer run through the Sahara Desert in Morocco. Effectively, it's broken up into a marathon for the first 4 days, an ultra marathon on day five, and then a half marathon on the last day. So it's broken up like that. The truth is, the reason I signed up for the Marathon de Sable is because my first, and again, I'm very transparent in everything I say, my first instinct on it was, I don't know if I can do that. And it's been a long time since I've had that feeling towards something. So I turned to it and was like, well, you know what? Fuck it, I have to do it now. Like, if that was my go-to, and I had that fear, and again, you know, Keith Cunningham, who's the influencer for Rich Dad, Poor Dad, does a lot of work with Tony Robbins, always says that the biggest tragedy in life is meeting the person you could have become. And I would never want to look back. And I do this weird thing. I do a lot of weird things, as I say on this podcast. But I do this weird thing that I look back on, well, what would I regret if I was 97 years old lying on my deathbed? Because I'm going to live till I'm at least 97, assuming nothing else happens. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I'd regret not doing that, because if I didn't do it, it would have been down to fear, you know. And again, you can Google stuff on it, and it wasn't the most the best thing to come up. I remember I was on my Snapchat and I went to put in Marathon du Sable distance, and what comes up on Google when you put in Marathon du Sable D, death comes up before distance. Oh, geez. So that wasn't the most reinforcing of things, but I'm looking forward to it. I've started training for it now. And more so because I'm very aware that behind every fear is a person you want to be, and that still scares me, you know. And I'm aware that when I don't have a little bit of doubt, I'm not pushing the limits far enough. And one of the reasons I signed up, and the reason I signed up for it, was it did give me doubt initially, and it still does. Like, there's days when I'm tired and I'm like, how the fuck am I going to run through the desert? Like, but again, it's just conditioning, the same as everything else. Like, I always tell my clients and my players and people that are coming through my programs, I'm like, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. You can only take one step at a time. So that's why I broke it down. I started by doing 2 kilometers at the end of every workout. Now I'm up to 10. I'm going to build that up to 20. And then I'll do a couple of half marathons, full marathons, and hopefully an ultra before then. And you break it up. Like, that's how you set goals, is you find out what the end goal is. You can't hit a target you can't see. So you find whatever the end goal is, and then you reverse engineer it backwards. You just break it down backwards. You know, we have in our brain called the reticular activation system. It's the cognitive neuroscience. It's your brain's internal GPS. So when you, it's the same. The example I use is when you walk into a bar and somebody else has the same t-shirt as you on, you notice it because you've got that t-shirt. That's your reticular activation system. It's your focus system of your brain. So when you set a target and set a goal, you're going to start seeing things that you never saw before. And I'm very aware that when I set the goal big and I set it for Marathon du Sable, I was like, I'll start figuring out ways how to do it. I'll figure out how to stop the chafing or the blisters, the things that are bothering me. I'll figure out how to chunk it down. And it's just because how you do anything is how you do everything. And it's a case of, I know it's going to help my business. I know it's going to help my relationship with my daughter, my mom, the people that are closest to my life. All of these things that scare us, and all of these things that we feel we can't do, or we set our own limitation, and all the limitations are self-created. They're the stories you've told yourself. As a result, I felt I had to do it, and I'd figure out a way on how to do it, and that's why I signed up for it.
Jesus, yeah, best of luck with all of that. Anyway, that sounds grueling, but no doubt you can do it. I suppose before we finish up, what we want to ask is, we kind of try to tie in with ourselves with our own brand, Frankly Nuts. What we want to ask you is, what's Frankly Nuts about Brian Keane? So what's open, honest, what's nutty, what's unique about you?
I have a couple of unique things about me, because just fucking, I think everybody has their own like stupid side. I touched on it briefly. It's very funny because when people follow my Snapchat story, particularly Snapchat, because you can be very, very open on that, because it disappears after 24 hours. You can answer it, and I get every question in there, from food activation for GEA to relationships to dealing with breakups to, you know, setting goals or whatever it is. So I put a lot of stuff up there. And one of the biggest things that comes back is that ridiculously insane ability to not take yourself seriously and merge it with something very serious. Like, I will try in a Snapchat story, and this is never intentional because I open them all and I read them at random. It's why there's such a fluctuation of questions. But sometimes you'll be asked about, you know, something really serious, like a death in the family or a relationship where somebody is, you know, feeling depressed or feeling anxious. And that could be put back to back with somebody asking how to last longer in bed and not blow their load as quick. Like, and it gives a massive contrast. And one of the reasons that I think I've been able to probably blow up my Snapchat recently, because there's a lot of people on there now, is down to the fact of, I don't care what people think of me. Like, if you like me, love me, hate me, your opinion of me means nothing. It doesn't matter to me. And I did a podcast episode. It was my second most downloaded podcast episode, How to Stop Caring What People Think About You. And realizing that life is too short to be caring what everybody thinks about you. And the truth is, as long as you're having fun what you're doing, you're loving the process. And I love the process. I'm a process guy. If I don't love the journey, I'm not doing the destination. I'm not going there. And probably the thing that's nutty is just my ability to answer whatever comes at me, regardless of how random, ridiculous, or stupid it is.
Brilliant, yeah. And we know you got to go. So thanks for sitting down with us. And look, we'd love to sit down with you again in the future.
Yeah, definitely.
What we usually do is we give our guests a piece of glass. But seeing as you're not actually sitting with us.
We'll do it on part two. We'll do it on part two.
So we'll give you a little kiss for today.
Yeah, lads. Oh, right to my heart. I love it. Lads, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks very much, Brian. Take it easy. Enjoy your day.
Cheers.
Thank you.
So that was a different episode today. A massive thank you to the boys at Franklin Nuts. I hope you got loads of value from this episode. This one's a lot different than normal. So be sure to hit me up on DM on Instagram, on Snapchat, BrianK019. And just let me know your feedback. Did you like it? Did you love it? Did you hate it? And what your thoughts were on this, because I will do more of these. I do a lot of interviews right now and different podcasts that I've been featured on, different interviews I've been doing. So if some of you like it, let me know, and I'll do more of it. If some of you don't like it, let me know, and I'll do less of it. And as I said, everything on the podcast is all based off feedback and what you guys want to hear and listen to. So keep me posted on that. Hit me up on DM, hit me up on Snapchat, let me know. Thanks again for listening.